Hello and welcome to an episode of A Legion of Three. Tonight we're going to cover Dreams of Unity. I'm John.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Glenn.
So this was our first episode, and I say was because we recorded it quite a bit before we're recording this now. So it's a little bit rougher than our later episodes, although I'm not sure you noticed because they're all rough.
Like sandpaper.
Oh, yeah. But and also, Glenn, for this episode, had to go take a leak and never returned. So
my zipper got stuck.
It's a real shame. Anyway, it's a good episode. I think we had a good time with it. But it is a little different from our later ones because it's a Legion of Two, I guess. And, well, you know, check it out for yourselves.
A little bit of housekeeping, spoiler warnings, and potty language.
Oh, yeah.
Just the way we liked it.
Yeah, I voted for the other title.
And what was that other title, Rob?
Two Heretics in a Cup. You know, it was short, it was simple, it was to the point, no one would ever find it. It was all for the best.
All right, tonight we're going to talk about a short story. Which short story are we going to do tonight, Rob?
Did we pick a short story ahead of time? It would have been really helpful for me to know that. We're going to talk about Dreams of Unity, a short story from about 4 years ago.
It's a good short story.
It is.
You want to start, or should I?
Let me start. I'll give a brief synopsis. So this story is actually from the point of view of someone we don't hear a lot about, the Thunder Warriors, mostly because during the time of the Heresy, most of them are dead. They met an unfortunate end when the Emperor deemed them no longer useful for his plans. So we meet Thunder Warriors, and we see that they're not exactly doing well, the few that do remain.
So the official story is they all died in triumph, as the last one planted the banner of victory and shouted unity, heralding the Emperor's complete conquest over Terra. But we find out in this story that that's not exactly the case. There's at least four of them still alive at the beginning of the story.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Yeah, spoiler warning. They don't get a happy ending for the most part. Not like the rest of the Thunder Warriors, who got a very happy ending being taken down by the custodians and the Space Marines.
Proto-Legion that would eventually become the Dark Angels. They're the good guys, remember?
Yes. Those bathrobe-wearing guys, always for a good time.
Nice. So this story takes place, begins in basically a gladiator fighting pit on Terra in a place called the Swath. Rob, do you know where the Swath is on Terra?
No, it's somewhere at the bottom of a hive, but it's not really very specific as to where it is. It is a forgotten place. It is a place where basically stuff goes to die. The dregs of humanity, and in this case the Thunder Warriors, who are not really human, are just kind of piled up garbage.
Live down there with whatever falls in that area. There's a line in the story where they basically say that the stuff that's down there is basically things that fell down from above, armor plating, dead ships, and all the other trash. So this is not a very good place to live.
No. But, you know, yeah, and everybody there, it talks a lot about the despair in the eyes and just that people have given up. I mean, people down there are waiting to die. That's kind of their lot in life is, you know, I'll be dead soon.
Yeah, so it won't matter.
Yeah.
We begin the story. There's a Thunder Warrior named Cabe already in the fighting pits fighting for his life versus a Chrono Gladiator, which I had to look up.
I was going to say, they actually came originally, I think, from the Inquisitor game, the 54mm game, and Chrono Gladiators are basically a type of almost a Servitor, except that they keep their wits about them. They're heavily modified, surgically modified, with, you know, huge weapons. The one in Inquisitor, I think, had two giant, like, mechanical claws that replaced his arms that basically had snippers on the end. And they basically have to kill to earn more time in their life. They're on a timer that's ticking away. You know, this guy literally had it on his forehead, I think. And if they don't kill, their time expires, and then with it.
Right. It mentions that basically once this head was separated from his body, his timer went to zero and his heart exploded. But
not that it mattered.
He was already dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had to look that one up because I didn't know what a Chrono Gladiator was.
I don't believe they ever made a model for it in 28 mil. I think it was only in 54 mil. The Sisters of Battle have something kind of like it, gosh, I can't think what they're called, but the guys who have their arms replaced with, like, flails.
The arcoflagellants?
Arcoflagellants, thank you. Similar idea, but these guys are, those are basically, you know, more mindless. Chronogladiators, I think, still have, you know, their wits, but they're also full of frenzon and other chemicals. I mean, they're basically made to be pit fighters with a lot on the line. Literally fight and kill or die.
Not a very good chance for a future there.
No chance for retirement. No.
So we join the story. Cave is fighting for his life and shouts his war cry for unity, which is the war cry that the Thunder Warriors had during the unification of Terra. And he charges the Chrono Gladiator, but slips and winds up getting impaled on the spear of the Chrono Gladiator.
But it's clear that he's outmatched. I mean, he doesn't stand a chance against Chrono Gladiator at any point.
He also doesn't back down. He's like a pit bull. He just doesn't know when he's beaten. And so the Chrono Gladiator starts toying with him. The character whose perspective we get for most of the story, which is Darin.
Yeah.
They refer to him as Da a bunch, so I guess there's an emphasis on the H. But Darin takes offense to this toying with Cabe and jumps into the pit, thus breaking the rules of the pit fight and challenging the Chrono Gladiator further, giving the audience something that they didn't expect, so more for their money, I guess.
Yeah.
But unfortunately...
Did you ever watch the Spartacus TV show that was on Starz?
I watched parts of it. Most of it had to do with female nudity.
It was a lot, yes.
Yeah.
It didn't shy away from male nudity either, but that's a whole separate issue.
I just fast-forwarded past that.
The point being that a lot of this, you know, really felt like Spartacus, because they talk about, you know, they have a ludus, this is the pit fighters. Impressing the crowd is a big deal. It's not just, you know, kill without any thought about who's watching and the money that's changing hands and things like that. This is really a very serious business, although there are later remarks that business is in hard decline, and we'll talk about why later.
Yeah. So he jumps in, has a brief but ultimately victorious fight against the Chrono Gladiator, then in a display of humanity, puts this weapon, the falchion, back in Cabe's hand and gives him an honored death. He gives him a one thrust stab to the heart to put his friend down, who was dying anyway.
Yeah.
But
there was
shows,
no saving him.
There was no saving him, that's correct. But at least he put him down with at least some honor and dignity. At least what works is honor and dignity between Thunder Warriors, I guess.
And so. Certainly we see, I mean, this is a big deal to Da. He is trying to maintain their honor and their dignity throughout this whole story. You know, even in the face of everybody else is falling apart, you know, you don't feel like he is, at least not outwardly so. We meet some other guys, and I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but the Thunder Warriors are in a bad state, and you know, Cabe was going to die at some point. It just happened a little bit faster in the gladiator pit. But clearly we see the Thunder Warriors are far, far from their best.
Right. They've fallen far from where they once were, but they're still potent fighters. I was reminded when I was reading this the first time, Blade Runner, what's the guy's name? Roy Batty?
Yes.
Roy Batty?
Yes.
Roy Batty and his thing about, you know, he'd seen, you know,
cruisers burning off the moons of Jupiter or something.
Sure.
Of Jupiter. Yeah.
He didn't want to die wasting away. He didn't want to die of cancer, you know, rotted from the inside. He wanted to die fighting.
Right.
And so that's a big thing for the Thunder Warriors. They wanted to die fighting with a weapon in their hand and with honor.
And ultimately, and again, it's going to go back to the title, they want to die for unity. I mean, they lived with a purpose. They were conquerors for a very long time until they weren't. And then, you know, now they're just kind of like they're rusting blades. They're rotting away.
Right. I can't lay claim to this one. I read it from somebody else's thread somewhere. But basically, their thought was that the Emperor, having the Custodes and the Proto-Legion wipe them out on Mount Ararat, was actually doing them a favor, letting them go out on a high note for unity, because he knew that what was going to happen next was a long period of decline that they would not survive from. They basically had a short lifespan after that point, and, you know, almost like a fresh if sold by date for food. They knew it was just going to go bad and nobody was going to buy it. So their thought on it was that the emperor was actually doing them a favor by having them wiped out like dogs on a mountaintop against overwhelming odds.
And, you know, he is a future seer, so he could have known that. He could have seen the future of the Thunder Warriors, of them becoming, you know, not just crippled, but destabilized. And it's not a good thing when one of them becomes destabilized, as we see. Right. Or at least we think we see. I guess there's a kind of a twist.
We go from the fight with the Chrono Gladiator to what happens after that. It's where we start meeting some more people in the story. There's a Taragata, who is essentially the leader of the Gladiator group.
He's a Ludus, for those Thank who you. Know your Gladiator.
I did not know how to say that word until today.
No worries.
I'm going to quote from the story. It says, "Your eyes were burned as an astropath, Taragata," I said. "That's why you should listen when I say dark things are afoot. Even here in the Maw, I have seen them from the beyond." So we learned that Taragata was an astropath that had been soulbound to the emperor and had his eyes burned out as an unfortunate side effect to that, which is common among astropaths. So,
but, you know, we've never heard of an astropath retiring and leaving service before. Normally they die. You know, they're just burned out by the horrible things that happened in the service of the emperor.
There is that. They do sometimes retire, though.
Sometimes I guess they become trainers, but this is not a typical retirement. Becoming a Ludus is not generally the career path of your astropath.
Right, which I assume is because something happened and he fell from grace from his household, because astropaths even in the 30K universe are very precious. I think there's a reference basically that even when they capture ships, the astropaths are like almost like Switzerland. They remain neutral territory, and the astropaths and the navigators are retained, whereas like the entire crew can get culled from a ship.
Yeah. You are not an important piece of this organization. You get to live, but you work for me now.
The next line after that was, "And you're hunted just like the rest of us, vermin," Darin says, and then Taragata shows his yellow teeth with an ugly smile and says, "Aye, but you still serve, don't you?" And then a third Thunder Warrior, Vizula, says, "The Legion ever serves." So that shows that the Thunder Warriors themselves, even though they had been betrayed by the Emperor and nearly culled to a man by the Custodes and the Proto-Legion, still remain loyal to the Emperor.
And there is a pecking order. And the pecking order is, you know, Taragata as the Ludus, and the gladiators beneath him in his service, and ultimately in the service to the Emperor, distantly at this point.
Then we learn a little bit more about the Thunder Warriors themselves. They start to basically carve up the body of their fallen brother and scavenge the parts. It turns out that Taragata has some sort of medical knowledge, and he's basically adept at scavenging the useful parts out of a fallen Thunder Warrior and using them to replace parts that have, I guess, grown cancerous or have failed in other Thunder Warriors to keep them alive even longer.
Well, and possibly from pit fighting, too, that you may be stabbed in something important from now and again.
So they begin the process of carving up their fallen brother and then disposing of the parts that they don't need in a furnace they make a mention of.
And it's clear that this happens. This is not a one-time thing. You know, they're good at this. They know what needs to be done, what's worth saving, what's not worth saving, and how to preserve things. They go into some detail about that he's got basically jars full of formaldehyde organs just ranked up, rowed up.
Bins full of cybernetics that other people have sacrificed, and then the actual organs in preservatives. And you're right, that's another thing that I got out of the story, was that this wasn't the first time. They knew exactly what to do and how to do it.
Right.
They just kind of went about their business. As gory as it is, they went about it like it was any other day.
That doesn't say much for your lifespan there.
So they have a conversation while they're doing this, and it puts you a little bit more in the mind of the Thunder Warriors themselves. This is between Darin and Vizula. And Vizula says, "I still dream of glory, Da. His voice dragged me back to the present. I feared he might be slipping again, but his eyes were lucid as he butchered Cabe. Machine parts as glistening organs sat amongst the useless offal. Work, even red work, helped to focus the mind." He paused, the knife edge dripping, his arms crimson all the way to the elbow. "Sometimes it's hard to determine whether this or the living present is my reality. I understand," I said softly, "all too well. Deep down, I know in my marrow, in my cancer-ridden core, I know." "The old days are gone. I know that," said Vizula. "The days of the storm of unity. They were killing days, red days of war and conquest. Empires kneeled to him. They kneeled to us." He paused, his knuckles whitening as he gripped the handle of the saw, but making no cut. "I miss them." "So do I, Vez. But we are not what we once were. We have lived too long. It's just some of us are too stubborn to die."
So this goes back to the title, Dreams of Unity, and that these guys are basically, as their minds deteriorate, we see that they're trying to relive their past glories because they don't really have any anymore. I mean, their glories are in the past, their lives are in the past, and they're just, you know, waiting to die, hopefully with honor.
The fact that they keep slipping from the present into the past, unfortunately, sometimes when they do that, it gets kind of scary.
Yeah, because in the past, they were butcherers. I mean, they fought in hand-to-hand. They didn't talk about having guns at all. They talked about their swords and sometimes shields.
Well, they do talk about bolters later on.
Okay.
During one of the assaults, they actually talked about their bolters basically melting in their hands from firing them too much.
I remember, and that I did not take that away from it. I took away how often they just are fighting with swords and tearing into their foes at close range, you know, and doing butcher's work.
Bloody close
shock
combat.
Assault. Yeah.
Hand-to-hand shock assaults. So, and it's what the Thunder Warriors excelled at. They're described as having proto power armor. They had overly muscled upper bodies to be able to swing very heavy, crude powered weapons, you know, chain swords, that kind of thing. So these guys were ungodly warriors to be able to conquer with the Emperor all of Terra. They're an awful, awful weapon for an awful time.
Yes. A very effective one, but one with a limited lifespan of its usefulness.
Right. Later on, during that conversation, Vizula starts to kind of drift off, and Da kind of catches him and snaps him back to reality. And their last words to each other at that point are, "You are yourself, brother?" And he replies, "I am myself." And the follow-up is, "And if you are ever not?" And then Vizula met my gaze. His eyes looked steady but resigned. "Then grant me the honored death." "The honored death," I replied, and headed for Tarragata's hab. So these guys, they're slipping, but again, all they want to do is die an honored death.
And not just fall apart.
And
that's another thing, too, is we see, you know, later on, his equipment is falling apart. His sword, you know, is a power sword that barely works, that he basically has to turn on and kind of smack it a few times before it powers up.
Yep.
And he himself, you know, talks about his cancered body is starting to fail. And so it's like, yes, you see these guys who know the end is near. If they can just get, you know, that last little bit of honor out of it, then it'll be okay to die.
They want to cross over that finish line, at least a winner.
Right.
But the finish line is not in sight. They don't know where that is.
That's right. And right now they're just garbage.
Right. So then the story takes a new turn, which I was not expecting when I first read it. Enters a custodian, one of the custodian guard. We get to meet. I'll ask Rob how we say his name again.
I think it's Taggio Malchion.
Taggio Malchion. We'll go with that.
Yes.
All right.
Let's just call him Taggio for short.
There we go. So Taggio is a custodes, a member of the Adeptus Custodes, and he has been dispatched, and it says, it had come from the Tower of Hegemon on a special mission appointed by Valdor himself. Rob, you want to touch on who Valdor is, Constantine Valdor?
So Valdor is basically the Primarch of the Custodes. He's the chief custodian. He is the right hand of the Emperor, I guess, if the left hand is Malkador. Yeah. So he is the big boss, and if he's involved, it's a big deal. I mean, there's no reason why ordinarily he would be giving a single custode, because there's, what, there's 4,000 of them, something like that? Or no, it's the 10,000, although it depends on where you are in the storyline. And that's the thing, too. We don't know exactly when the story takes place. There's some hints, but it's not entirely clear when this takes place. But anyway, there's no reason he would ordinarily be giving an assignment to a single guy hunting, but there is something special that Taggio is looking for.
Right. The other thing that I'll put in is that Constantine Valdor, I believe, is the only member that is not another Primarch that almost stands face to face with the Primarchs.
You're right.
And also would not back down from a Primarch.
Well, no, there's because been a couple... he's Big E's bodyguard, basically.
Essentially.
Yeah.
All right. So we move on just a little bit. It basically describes the single custodian hanging out in this Coronis Grav carrier, which has a model from Forge World. I looked it up because I'm not a Custodes player, so I didn't really have all this stuff memorized. But it is a sleek looking Grav vehicle that was just apparently hanging out up in the sky. And when this Custodes got the go signal, he strapped on a maglock tether and
a monofilament tether at that. I thought that was very funny that they mentioned he's basically a monofilament wire attaching him as he's rappelling down.
Right. So just before he jumps out, what I'm assuming is Valdor sends him a message that says, "Ever since Nassau have we fought for Terra," said the voice to the warrior's voxlink, the first he had heard in several hours. I had to look that up because I didn't know what it was, and you and I were talking about it earlier. But basically, there's a reference to it in Horus Heresy Book 3, Extermination, and it says, "Upon the pillars of the Black Manse of Nassau, capital of one of the earliest techno-barbarian holds to submit before he who was to be known as the Emperor, inscriptions record the Lord of Lightning coming before the Warlord King, flanked by his four giants of crimson and gold, demanding surrender." So I'm assuming this is a reference to basically the earliest days of the Custodes alongside the Emperor during the Unification Wars. So, Rob, you and I had a little bit of a discussion before this about why we think that line was said.
Oh, so he's ultimately sending Taggio to hunt an Astartes, which is something that kind of doesn't sit well. Yeah, a little bit. Well, you know, this... if we should have said spoiler warning at the beginning of the podcast. It's too late now. It doesn't sit well with him because hunting Astartes is kind of dirty work. I mean, it's not... the Custodes are the bright, gleaming poster boys of the Emperor, and he's down in the muck, in the grime, in the, you know, where people go to die, hunting a rogue space marine, a rebel space marine. And that's something that doesn't feel right, but he's being reminded that he's working for the Emperor. I mean, this is ultimately just as important as guarding the Emperor.
Yeah. So it may feel like dirty work, but it's actually, you know, doing something that's going to help everybody. So basically, I'm with you now. I think that it's Constantine Valdor just kind of to pacify his mind a little bit and set him at ease with this dirty work that he has to do. Has to get his hands dirty.
Yeah, I mean, this is Black Ops. This is basically go down there and kill this guy, because he, number one, we don't know this yet, but we'll learn soon. You know, this is a heretic, not a heretic yet. Sorry, that's 40K. Sorry. This is a
traitor,
Alpha Legion Marine, who is part of the greater Alpha Legion infiltration of Earth, of Terra. And that's why we think this takes place after Praetorian of Terra. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yeah. No, I blanked out on the name. So we think it takes place around that time. You know, we see a lot of, again, spoiler warnings, because we're going to be all over the place now. We see a lot of Alpha Legion infiltrators, you know, do their thing there. that happens all the way up until the Siege of Terra. I mean, Alpha Legion get in Terra and do all sorts of horrible things, and we're hunting one now down here in the Maw, and we'll learn more about them shortly.
Right. The Custodes jumps out of the back of the Coronis Grav Carrier and descends down into the Maw, and then using a cloak, almost like a stealth boy from Fallout, it hides his presence, hides his sound, just completely masks him to the people that are all around. They don't even notice him when he drops down.
Which is crazy, because they're not small.
No. He drops, I think they say, the last 50 meters, but then he has some sort of a grab shoot thing that stops him just before he hits the ground and sets him down nice and, you know, gently. So now there's a custodian loose in the Maw, and he's been ordered to kill and eradicate all presence of his target. But we don't know exactly who the target is yet. Like you said, we're going to find that out shortly. But at this point in the story, we don't know. We only have to assume that he's there for our lead people, the Thunder Warriors, that have now made their presence known by fighting in the pits. At least that was my assumption when I read it through the first time.
Yes, and particularly, again, we have seen the Thunder Warriors fall back into their memories and go a little bit berserk, because their memories are them at their glory days when they're, you know, killing and savagely tearing people apart. And so the next place that we turn up is a place where people have been killed and savagely torn apart.
A bar called the Silo. That's where Darren goes to find Garyok, who is the fourth Thunder Warrior that we meet during this story. Garyok had a bout scheduled for later that day, and he hadn't shown up yet. So Darren got sent to go find Garyok and drag him back from the bar so that he could go fight for his life in the pits. When we get to the bar, we are told the story from Darren's perspective. Darren opens his eyes after reliving a moment in his past. And when he opens his eyes, what he sees about him are bodies of what once was the patrons of the bar. And the only person that's still standing is Garyok, who has some sort of a hook in his hand. And everybody else in the bar has been ripped to pieces. Doesn't look good for Garyok.
No, it looks like, you know, and we assume that this is the work of a Thunder Warrior who has lost himself and, you know, just relive the past quite viscerally in the present.
Yes. So Darren does what he needs to do when Garyok attacks him. I'm probably saying his name wrong. It's G-A-R-I-O-K. Or did I get that right? G-A-R-I-O-K? Or is it... Let me look in the book again. You know, we have these books in front of us. We should probably read them.
I think it's Garyok. That works. Garyok. Garyok. G-A-I-R-O-K.
Like hair and okay?
Or it could be like Cairo, but Garyok.
Garyok?
Yeah. All right. Sure. Garyok.
We'll go with Garyok. Garyok.
That sounds like a good metal name, too.
That sounds like a band I'd listen to.
Yeah, I dig it.
All right. So, Garyok, as Darren starts to wake up and come back to the present, Garyok seems to be slipping back into the past. And so Darren basically stabs him in the chest and right through the heart.
Puts him down, you know, takes him out as a threat, but also gives him an honorable end. You know, it's not, he doesn't just let him revel in his, you know, falling apartness. He puts him down quietly.
It's the second time in this story, in a few short pages, and it, actually in the timeline of the story, in a few short hours,
right,
where a Thunder Warrior has been slain with a sword thrust to the heart with a weapon in his hand. So, again...
And this one, he kind of embraces him. He kind of, like, you know, he kills him, but he does it in almost a loving manner. And it sounds so weird to say, but it kind of is. It kind of is like, you know, you have to die, you've gone too far... But, you know, I still love you, man.
Well, that's another thing that I was going to point out to you and ask you if you caught it, too. He kills his friend, Garyok, and then there's a line in there where it's like he couldn't hold his head up anymore. He had to basically hang his head down and cry for the loss of his friend.
Right.
He's a Thunder Warrior, but as Astartes are raised from prepubescent boys. The Thunder Warriors were raised as men. They were inducted willingly or unwillingly, mostly unwillingly, I'm told, into the Emperor's army and modified to become Thunder Warriors. But they were fully fledged human adult males. But this one, Darren, at least, has not lost all of his humanity at this point, even though he's close to death and wasting away and living in this awful, awful place. That's almost, it reminds me of Human Occupied Landfill, if anybody's ever seen that role-playing game.
Haven't heard that reference in a long time.
Bring that one back up from long-term storage.
Yes.
It's an awful place. It's awful circumstances in an awful time in an awful universe. And yet he still weeps for his lost brother that he just had to put down.
So. And it does say that unlike, the other guy that he had to put down earlier, they had served together. This guy he actually did consider to be a friend. A Thunder Warrior that he not only respected, but really was friend with, even though he clearly had a drinking problem that we'd heard about earlier.
Right.
What are you going to do?
It says, I knew Cabe. I had fought alongside him as a sword brother, but Gyrock had been my friend. I wept for his passing, choking to death in some dirty swath bar. Where is the honor for us? I asked the darkness, but silence answered, we have lived too long. He does what he has to do. He throws Gyrock onto his back and tries to take him back, continue with business, take him back to Taragata's place, and they're going to continue the butchering and the salvage. Yep. So,
harvest whatever he's got to harvest.
Yeah. Not the heart this time, though.
Yeah.
So, they go back, and then we go back to the custodies. Taggio moves through the narrow alleyways and the tunnels of the swath and searching for his quarry, and eventually he lands in the bar. And we figure out that it's the same bar that Darren and Gyrock had just left. He finds essentially a heady stench of low-grade alk grain and cooled viscera invading his nostrils. As an Ephroi, E-P-H-R-O-I, and I had to look this one up, and you want to expand on what an Ephroi is, Rob?
So they are an order within the Custodes. They are basically kind of their shadow black ops people, that they specialize in covert operations, they specialize in assassination and infiltration. They're not nice people, which is kind of against what the general custodes are viewed as. And it's even thought at some point, I don't remember where I saw this reference, that they may have had dealings with the Officio Assassinorum.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
Hardcore.
Nice. So it says, as an Ephroi, he had been trained to seek out evidence. He smelled transhuman blood. Then he engaged the internal vox. He says, could be Legion, those who escaped the purge. The answer that comes back is, proceed with caution. He goes on, keeps investigating a little bit, and finds a brand, a mark, a red maw, like a brand. And just as he finds that, he gets attacked. And the scene changes yet again. So we go back to Darren, and he's carrying Gyrock's body back to home, essentially, to scavenge what they can. And when he gets there, he finds, Rob?
The place is on fire. He's not sure who did it. He thinks immediately that it may be the guy, the owner of the Chrono Gladiator, who he dispatched earlier. It could be any number of people. I mean, there's no love lost among the folks in the swath, and certainly, Taragata probably had lots of enemies. But he rushes in. He saves Taragata briefly. Taragata is basically too wounded, too smoke-inhaled, and too fragile in general. When he gets him out, he basically has a few minutes with him, and then he dies. But he watches as all the preserved organs that they've been saving from his brother Thunder Warriors are destroyed. In fact, they actually, because of the chemicals they're sitting in, make the fire much, much worse, and the place basically explodes.
What he doesn't find when he goes in there is evidence of his fourth Thunder Warrior brother, Vizula, who he knew was there. He doesn't find any evidence of his body, so he then assumes it has to be Vizula.
Right. It could have been one of his enemies. It could have been one of his friends.
Correct. As a last gesture, he is given by Taragata his rad pistol, which comes in very important later in the story. Taragata presses the rad pistol into his hands and at that moment passes. And then Darin promises to take care of Vizula, who is certain is the one that did this. So,
you know, it's kind of funny. I always find this interesting in the books. A pistol that would fit in the hands of a normal human seems like it would not work well for the Thunder Legion.
Just roll with it.
That's fine. They make reference to this one time with Reboot Gilliman using a normal bolter and struggling to get his finger into the chamber to pull, or not the chamber, but the to pull the trigger on it, basically. You know, it's so wrong for the size of his hand, but it's not normally ever addressed. This was almost like a comical thing that he's fighting. I think it was when Alpha Legion infiltrators try to kill him, and he gets a hold of one of their bolters, and it's like, you know, a toy gun in his hands.
I will point out that Corvus Korax, I think, is quoted or having used a heavy bolter, like a regular bolter.
Right.
And then there's another one where Horus himself hops into the passenger side of a land speeder and flies over to where his brother Sanguinius is for a conversation. I'm looking at those two models going, that's not going to work. But hey, you know, we'll just roll with it.
We'll just pretend.
We'll just pretend for now.
6 foot versus 10 foot. Yeah, it's all good. It's no biggie. Okay.
I've seen this movie.
God, no. Moving on. Quickly. Move on.
All right. So we move on. Darin chases after looking for his fourth Thunder Warrior brother. And he moves through the swath, and most of the people just get the hell out of his way. But he's basically looking for any signs that he can find of where Vizula went. So, you know, you would think that there would be a trail of destruction, but they don't really describe any of that. What he does see, however, is a Thunder Warrior Legion lightning bolt carved into a pillar leading down into some sort of subterranean temple, basically, or bathhouse, I guess. I forget how they describe it in the story. I probably should have taken better notes, but I didn't. But this reminded me of the stories with the space wolves, where they carve a mark into a doorway or a hatch or in the floor to warn other people coming behind them that there's something on the other side that they need to know about.
Danger ahead.
That was my thought. When I read that the first time, I missed it. When I read it the second time, I was like, oh, that's what they meant. Okay. So Vizula had carved this lightning bolt to basically show that that's the direction that he went. And so Darin goes to find him. He looks for him and does find his brother, but doesn't get the answers that he thought he was going to get when he does find him. So when he does find Vizula, what does he find, Rob?
He finds him basically dying. He's mortally wounded. He has got a terrible wound across the stomach. He's been blinded by an acid attack. And then it becomes pretty obvious to him, you know, who did this. Because Thunder Warriors do not spit acid, but another one of the Emperor's sons does.
Yep. Astartes.
Indeed. So he thought, you know, he was coming to find and put down his friend.
For the third time in the same day.
Right. It's been a rough day. And he comes to find out something entirely different has happened, that the people that attacked Taragata were Astartes, and Vizula fought them off as best he could and is dying for it.
Yep. The line that they have in the story is, "Acid," he said, correctly assuming the reason for my silence. "Forgot they could do that," he laughed, "but the effort cost him. He gave them all the gifts, didn't he? And he left us to fester and rot." He reached out and grabbed my arm, fumbling with his blindness. He said, "We should not have lasted this long." I held his head to the light, trying to examine the ghastly injuries to his face. He resisted as if ashamed of his condition. "The gut wound is fatal," he hissed, teeth clenched with a sudden flare of pain. "Who did this?" I asked, and I let him go. I peered into the darkness, but found no attackers lurking. He says, "They were among us, Da, hiding in the swath. I fought them. They ran and led me here. left me to die, he grimaced, and I felt the pull of Azula's mortal thread growing taut. Who, brother? Who hid from us? He says, a mark, a red maw like a brand, and pointed to his left cheek, his finger lathered in blood. They said his name, said, I grabbed his armored collar and wrenched him to me. Tell me, brother, let me avenge you, said, he is coming. Azula let out a long, shuddering breath, and it was over. And so I was thinking to myself, all right, who's coming? What are they talking about? I don't understand. I'm so lost. And then I,
it's a good thing it's a short story, right?
Yeah, you know, it's words. So, all right, so it's a page turner. So I got to go figure out what this is. So, what does Darin do? His buddy has now died. He has nowhere to take him to, so he opens his eyes, gets ready to shoot himself in the head. He's so distraught. He's just lost all of his friends, everybody that was close to him. He actually contemplates suicide. He talks about head bowed. I shut my eyes and felt the heft of the rad pistol against my leg. I considered drawing it. My fingers closed around the grip. A single shot, if it could still fire, left temple. I opened my eyes and let the pistol go. For unity, I muttered, and laid the Legion ring in Vizula's lap. So he came very close to committing suicide at that point, but then decided against it because of duty and honor. And then as he opens his eyes again, he hears the faint clash of steel and moves towards the sounds of battle. Because if you're a Thunder Warrior and you want to die with honor, you want to die fighting. And if somebody else is already fighting, that's where you want to go.
That's the time and the place to be.
Right. So, what does he find, Rob?
So, he chases down the sounds of the clash, and he finds our friend Taggio is taking quite a beating from a possessed legionary. And this is something we talked about beforehand. It is a possessed member of the Alpha Legion, one of the infiltrators sent to Terra to raise hell, and he's doing a pretty good job, because ordinarily, you know, it's like 5 to 10 Astartes versus one Custode, and this is one possessed, you know, granted, he's special, kicking the ass of Taggio. Taggio is taking the worst of this. He's basically, on the ground when Da finds him and being pretty heavily tore up. We have never seen a possessed Alpha Legion before. They've not really come up in any of my reading in the Heresy. You know, we know that the Galvorback are a thing. They come up in the first Heretech. We know that the Lupercalia are the possessed sons of Horus that come up. I think they first show up in, what's Horus's flagship?
Vengeful Spirit?
Vengeful Spirit, yes. I'm pretty sure that's when we first see sons of Horus taking possessed guys. That's when Tormagaden comes back.
Yes.
And I think the Lupercalia are created at the same time.
I had forgotten about that, but I think you're correct.
Tormagaden. Oh, so bad. Such an awful thing to happen to a loyalist. Anyway, so we see for the first time here a possessed Alpha Legion, and he's quite powerful. He is, you know, very successfully with his claw hands tearing up some Custode.
They describe the demon or demonic marine as being unarmed except for the dagger-like claws that he's got, and that says something about the Custodes himself, because although he wasn't exactly ambushed during that initial fight, which started in the bar, it sounds like both of them gave a good accounting for themselves, even though it was a sneak attack. It sounds like the Custodian and the demon both suffered wounds during that fight, and then the fight moved to here. So it was a mobile combat.
Yes.
I'm assuming that the demon wounded the Custodian and then fled to this. Would it be wrong to call it a fane, Rob?
It effectively is. I mean, it's basically a sluice pipe that has been repurposed by, and we haven't talked about this yet, there are 8 cultists standing in there, as well as quite a few of them on the ground, and they have some kind of mystic symbol drawn in blood, because why not? And they're expecting to take whatever is left of Taggio and sacrifice him, because the blood of a Custode is worth more than the blood of a cultist.
Well, they mentioned in the story that he shares the blood of the Emperor.
Right.
So
good stuff. Potent stuff.
Yeah. So Da shows up following the sounds of the fight and comes in to this fane just in time to see basically the custodian on his back getting hammered by the demon. And these eight cultists basically turn to face him. The demon ignores him. The custodian expects him to be one more person to help, you know, pick on him.
Right.
And the eight cultists say, no, you're not going to stop this, and try and stop him.
Interloper.
Which doesn't end well for most of them. I think he literally kicks one guy through.
Yes.
Which is wow.
It shows that Thunder Warriors are serious business. I mean, that he faces, and that he takes wounds. I mean, he takes some serious cuts. He loses, he takes one in the arm, it talks about, and it kind of talks about a little bit that not only his Thunder Warrior training, but also his gladiatorial training is, you don't show the weakness. You don't show the fact that that really hurt and that he's, you know, bleeding profusely from some of these cuts. But right. He tears these cultists apart. He literally, like you said, he's, you know, slices this one, he beheads that one, he's, you know, punches this one, he kicks one in the chest, and his foot goes through, and he's got to stand there shaking the body off of his foot so he can continue fighting. I mean, that's an image that sticks with you right there.
Yep. Having to shake off the ragged corpse that's of the cultist right. to keep moving.
It just slows you down.
And then the last one slits her own throat rather than to face him.
Yes.
Just to make the sacrifice complete, all eight of them.
Let me make this quick for you. I'm out. Yeah. You know, you ever step in like a cardboard box and you're trying to shake it off your foot? That's my vision here.
I kind of thought of the beginning of 1984 Terminator with Arnold Schwarzenegger as he punches the punk straight through the chest. I was like, oh, geez, it's got to be like that.
So eventually he gets the possessed Marine's attention by, you know, slaughtering all the cultists that were accompanying him.
And then attacking.
And he finds that a Thunder Warrior might be a good match for a Marine. And we actually see that in, I think it's the Honored Dead.
Outcast Dead.
Thank you. So much honor in this story that it's got me messed up. The Outcast Dead, we see a Thunder Warrior, albeit, again, one that is past his prime, fight some Marines and Custodes, if I remember correctly. But this possessed Marine is much more than a match for Da. He is faster, he is stronger, he is in many ways going to kill Da, and gives him a fine account of doing so.
Yes, he's met his match and then some.
Yeah.
But just as he's about to be cut down, he remembers pulling the rad pistol and shoots the demon square in the chest with a rad pistol. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because you're better at the rules than I am.
I'm better at a lot of things than you are, John.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. In many cases, that's true. But the rad pistol in the game lowers the toughness of the target on a successful wound.
That's right. And okay. If we know our Gal Vorbach, they are normally toughness 5.
Toughness 5. So
he's
if it was
evening up the odds.
Game terms, he's lowering the guy's toughness so that he's easier to wound.
Right.
Which then, after shooting him, it basically puts the demon on the back foot for a split second, and he's able to stab and slice into the demon and wound him grievously, but not kill him. He's not able to, like, finish him off, but he is able to at least wound him.
Which in game terms, gives... possessed guys, Gal Vorbach again, have two wounds. And so he gives him one wound, and this sounds so silly to say that, but it's true. I mean, they basically tried to do this as if it were, you know, a match in the game. First, he lowers his toughness, then he stabs his sword into him and effectively makes him half dead.
Makes him half dead. That's a good way to put it.
Sure.
Which then gives the custodian time to recuperate from the wounds that he's gotten. And the custodian pops up from behind, repeating the war cry that Darren had just shouted for unity, and slices into the demon,
making him wholly dead.
Finishing the demon off, yes. So at this point, we're almost to the end of our story, but there's only a couple more points that we need to cover. So at this point, Darren has been very badly wounded. He's nearly dead. He's had essentially the fight of his life against a beast that he should never have ever seen. It's, what is it, the thing that should not be from Metallica?
But, you know, he actually identified it as something from beyond. You know, he had a little bit of an inkling of what it was. It was not just a traitor, but it was something evil that lurked, you know, in the outer realms or something else. So, you know, unlike the Marines who were completely ignorant of the perils of the warp, he certainly had some knowledge that something like this could exist. And certainly that it was evil and needed to die.
Yes. I think there's a reference somewhere where the Emperor had basically hardened the Thunder Warriors against magic or the demonic. Essentially, basically trying to cast a spell of any kind on them basically hurt the person trying to cast the spell. So it's possible that that had something to do with his resistance to the demon.
Could be.
Could be.
I don't recall that, but I won't argue it because I don't remember one way or the other.
Okay. Anyhow, so they've just had this fight. He's not going to survive. He stops the custodian before the custodian can put his sword away. And they have a small conversation. Would you like to cover the conversation, Rob? Or
well, we can take turns. The custodian says, basically, you're a Thunder Warrior. I thought you were all dead.
Right. He asks him, are you Thunder Legion? And I thought you were all dead. We are. Near enough is what Darren says back. And they basically trade names. But that shows that even the custodians are believing what they're being told by the rest of the Imperium, or the history that they're being told by the rest of the Imperium. Going back to the earlier statement that we had about the ever since Nassau, from which we think was from Constantine Valdor, you and I were talking earlier about whether or not we thought that Taggio was one of the older custodians. And this is my argument for he's not one of the older custodians. He's one of the newer recruits since the time of Unity. Because if he had been present at Mount Ararat and the culling of the Thunder Warriors, he would remember and know that they didn't all make it out of there. So, but again, it's possible that the Emperor, you know, forced them to forget. Who knows?
It's lots of things are possible. And it's also true, you know, the Emperor may think they're all dead, although of all people he should know, the ones that are still around, he ought to be aware of them. But we never know. The Emperor's omniscience is, you know, sometimes there and sometimes not, but that's a whole nother. We'll talk about that in another episode, should we ever get to Big E.
There you go. So, as Darren starts to slide off into madness yet again, believing that he is again on Mount Ararat with, you know, all the other victors of the Thunder Warriors and planting the banner of unity, he asks that Taggio give him an honored death, and Taggio stands behind him with his sword, and as Darren cries tears of joy, he whispers for unity and hears the blade fall. And that's the last line of the story is, and heard the blade fall. So
he gets what he wants.
He gets what he wants. He gets an honored death granted to him by a custodian.
It's, you know, many, many Thunder Warriors got that before. He just, you know, got it late. His was lost in the mail for a while.
Right. So,
and also, you know, he saved the custode's life. He saved, you know, Earth from some degree. I mean, who knows what could have happened had things been different, had the custode been sacrificed, had this Alpha Legionnaire lived to, you know, continue to wreak havoc on Earth. Who knows? This could have, you know, this could be the butterfly effect to some extent of things could have been much worse later on had things not gone this way, had some of the Thunder Legion lived here in this horrible place and stopped what could have been an awful circumstance.
Had he turned his back on the servant of the Emperor.
Right.
And turned his back on the Emperor for all the things that the Emperor had done against them. That was a recurring theme in this story, you know, all over the place. Is basically the Emperor gave them the shaft every which way but loose, and still they remained loyal.
And they acknowledge, and this is a definitely recurring theme too, that they've lived too long, that they should have been dead. They really were no longer held a purpose. But obviously, There was. If not for him, then bad things would have happened. He died a hero.
He did. He did. One of the other things that I got out of this, or, you know, as a what if this small group of Thunder Warriors, and you mentioned earlier the outcast dead, so we know that there's a few more in another place on Terra, in hiding, basically.
That was near the palace.
Yeah, Babu Dakal. So very close to the palace. There are other groups. We can almost be certain that there are other groups of Thunder Warriors, other places on Terra. And we know later, spoilers, that the Emperor's children don't join in with the main fight for the palace, that the Emperor's children wreak their vengeance on the population of Terra, not on the palace itself. So one of the things that I had crossed my mind was, what happens when the Emperor's children, you know, go into some hive somewhere expecting to face only humans, and all of a sudden there's a bunch of really pissed off Thunder Warriors that, you know, are still loyal to the Emperor and the rest of humanity, and basically take on their mantle of the protectors of humanity against a bunch of Emperor's children who
weren't
expecting to face them. Yeah, one last time.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see if they go down that path for one of the stories. I'm sure they might.
They could.
If they have already, I'm hoping that, you know, I'll catch the name of it and be able to read it soon.
So, have you read Saturnine yet?
I have not. I have read part of it.
Okay. The Emperor's Children have a big role in that book, so you'll get that.
I realized that I was getting parts and pieces of the story out of order, so I stopped so that I could go back and catch up on some of the other ones. So,
a fine book, and maybe someday here on Things You Ought to Know, we might get to it.
Awesome. Well, Rob, I think we did a pretty good job on this first one.
Not bad for our first outing. No, I think so.
Right. We have room for improvement, but. Awesome. Well, thanks, Rob. I really appreciate it. I think that, you know, this was a good story, and maybe we can do some other ones later.
I definitely think we've got a few more in us. I don't know if we're going to stick to... We can't stick to all the short stories. We have to do some of the novels, just because I feel like our purpose is we're going to touch on things, hopefully, you know, with our own skewed perspective, because it's the only one we have. But we may come across some stuff that you haven't read the book in a while, and it now links up to later books and passages and things, and maybe some of the stuff from the Black Books. And, you know, we obviously are Heresy gamers as well as Heresy fiction aficionados. So hopefully we'll bring some new angles and aspects and thoughts into things that you may not have had yet. Who knows? Maybe we'll surprise you.
Nice. Would you look at the time?
It's really something. Thanks, John. I'll talk to you later.
All right, Rob.